Chapter 17, False Leadership. In accordance with the program laid down in the protocols of the Elders of Zion, the Jew, in his devilish cunning, has concocted a number of organizations that seem to be on the side of the white man. They come in various guises, such as those fighting communism. These are undoubtedly the most numerous. There are probably more than 100 in this category in the United States alone, and they profess to be ardently patriotic, Christian, and anti-communist. At the same time, they usually are strongly pro-Jew and pro-nigger. Most of them completely confuse the issue, deploring the symptoms of the disease, rather than identifying and fighting the cause of the disease itself, namely, the Jew. Their ridiculous program, it would seem, is to get together with the Jews and the niggers to fight the Jews and the niggers, an obvious contradiction on the face of it. In so doing, they give a powerful mantle of protection to the Jewish network, the root of all our evils. By far, the largest among these is the John Birch Society, headed by that ardent Jew lover himself, Robert Welsh. Well organized and well financed, a lot of money coming from the Jews themselves, and the rest of it coming from concerned and frightened white people who are looking for some organization to lead them out of the mess they are in. The John Birch Society is doing pretty well. In fact, to misquote slightly Robert Welsh, "We mean good business every step of the way." Whereas the Birch Society claims its fight is against communism, its real purpose is to protect the Jewish conspiracy. What the John Birch Society really does is act as a collecting organization for all those aggressive and militant white racists that would become potential leadership in the fight against the Jews and the niggers. It then sets about to confuse and befuddle their thinking, conjure up a false culprit, namely communism, and then debilitate the white man's money, time, and energy into numerous useless projects, which they are dead certain will never lead to any success. Instead of exposing the cause, namely the Jew, it goes after the effects and protects the cause. Above all, it keeps polluting its membership's minds with bad news, a feeling that we are completely surrounded, a feeling of frustration and pointlessness, a feeling that the fight is pretty well lost and pretty well over, but we might as well go through the useless motions anyway. It does an excellent job of debilitating, discouraging, demoralizing, and finally neutralizing the white membership. Finally, they give up the fight, and in most cases can never again be recruited into a useful, constructive fight against the Jews and the niggers. I say that in most cases. It is not true in all cases. I myself am an ex-graduate from the Jewish-sponsored John Birch Society, being misled in my early naivete into thinking that I was going to be able to do something useful in our fight against the Jews and the niggers by joining the John Birch Society. Fortunately for our side, and unfortunately for the Jewish side, a number of the more astute and more capable graduates of the John Birch Society do carry on the fight after they see through the Birch hoax. Without spending too much further time on the John Birch Society, may I add that the John Birch Society was formed by the Jews in order to collect some of the better potential white leaders, completely mislead them, put up a false culprit and a false program. They thereby hope to protect the Jew and neutralize the battle by white racial loyalists and destroy their cause. To nobody's great surprise, a large number of the chapter leaders, coordinators, and staff of the John Birch Society are Jewish. Then we have such organizations as the White Citizens' Councils and the Ku Klux Klan, who accomplish the same thing as the John Birch Society, but corral those that the Birch Society could not possibly get, because the Birch Society completely excludes the racial issue. The White Citizens' Councils are seemingly anti-nigger, but when it comes to pointing the finger at the real culprit, the Jew, they will vigorously protect and shield him from any responsibility in the notorious Jewish plot to destroy the white race. The Ku Klux Klan goes just a little further than this, and it too seems to be anti-nigger, and at times professes even to be mildly anti-Jew. However, both of these organizations are really a farce and a sham in the fight against the Jewish conspiracy. Usually, they will end up with a meaningless flag-waving program citing their adherence to the Constitution and their Christian principles, having thereby snookered a lot of white racial loyalists into their ranks and into contributing money to their organization. They will then go all out to support phony political candidates that so much as show a mild conservative stance, but are as phony as they are themselves. The original Ku Klux Klan did a tremendous job 100 years ago in saving the white race in the South from mongrelization by the Jews and the niggers, a drive which undoubtedly would have led further to total mongrelization of America by this time. The Ku Klux Klan of the 1860s was a fine organization that did a tremendous job and proved once again that the white man, when his back is against the wall, will fight to save his race. However, the revived and new so-called Ku Klux Klan that was reorganized in 1915 is not by any means the same organization, nor does it embody the same principles. Actually, the present Ku Klux Klan from 1915 onward is an animal of a completely different color. It was organized by members of the Masonic Order, which in turn was organized by the Jews and is controlled by them to this day. It should therefore come as no surprise that the resulting product, namely today's Ku Klux Klan, is another phony front for the Jews to enlist and corral those members of the white race that would be the dynamic and potential leadership in the real fight against the Jews. It neutralizes those who instinctively have the fighting spirit and healthy instincts to carry on the fight. It is their purpose to steer these good white people into their organization, to again rig them into a phony fight that will ensure defeat, neutralize them, and render them useless. The Klan has a real tricky hooker built into its position. It is presumably against Jews, niggers, and strangely, Catholics. Whereas the first two are racial and a legitimate target, by declaring its hostility towards Catholics, it opens up a religious split in the white race itself, thereby negating any good it might have accomplished otherwise. It thereby also lays itself wide open to the criticism of bigotry and enmity of a huge segment of the white race itself, namely the Catholics. This schizophrenia was deliberately planned by the Jews, of course. Then there are the Christian crusaders like Billy James Haggis, Carl McIntyre, Dr. Fred Schwartz, and many lesser satellites who are vigorously pretending to lead the fight against communism in the name of Christianity. These phonies tell us, if only we would all turn to Christianity, why, we would soon conquer this sinful philosophy. To hear them tell it, it's a battle between ideologies, a battle between God and Satan. What they have never explained is why God should be so impotent in a struggle against a creature that reputedly he himself must have evidently created, and why it is that their God continuously seems to be losing the battle, while his hateful inferior creation continually seems to be winning. It is not too surprising that Schwartz himself, an Australian Jew, is supposedly fighting the battle against communism in the name of Christianity, and under the cloak that he himself, of course, is a Christian white man. Carl McIntyre and Billy James Haggis are not known to be Jews, but it would not surprise me at all if they are not, in fact, undercover converso Jews grasping leadership in a useless fight that will again drain the white man of his resources, energy, and time, and lead him down a dead-end street. Not only that, but it will lead many concerned white people back into the old snare of Christianity, where he will completely neutralize himself and, in fact, enlist his forces and energy on the side of the Jews. It is further no great surprise to me that Billy James Haggis is most ardent in his praise of Israel and organizes endless exertions to Jerusalem and Israel in cooperation with the Israeli Tourist Bureau. Carl McIntyre has purchased bonds for Israel with money he has looted from his white Christian supporters, and is now engaged in a project to build a huge and expensive replica of the Temple of Jerusalem. In other words, the Jewish temple built by Solomon at Cape Canaveral, where he now sits on millions of dollars worth of real estate. Both Haggis and McIntyre have been unusually successful financially while preaching the Jewish gospel that it is more blessed to give than to receive, and lay not up treasures on earth, but lay up treasures in heaven. McIntyre has been successful in financing 1,000 or more radio stations across the United States, preaching his deceptive program, and in turn, reaping and looting millions out of the pockets of the white supporters whom he is misleading. There are a number of smaller organizations that are successfully following the same formula, but are too numerous to mention at this point. Then there are such organizations that are seemingly anti-Jewish, but again, strongly pro-Christian, a completely incompatible position, one that is completely self-destructive on the face of it, as it is in practice. One such is the Nationalist Christian Church, led by a certain Dr. Petito. Whereas Dr. Petito professes to be ardently pro-Hitler, violently anti-Jew, he again takes those elements of our potential white fighting force that agree in this respect, and then, through a circuitous route, returns these people into the Christian fold. His main line of argument is that the Israelites of the Old Testament were a wonderful, God-fearing people, and that they did indeed have a special sweetheart arrangement with God. He claims that today's Jews are not at all the same people, and in fact, lo and behold, would you believe, we, the white people of Europe and America, are the real Israelites. By means of a lot of unsubstantiated and far-fetched hocus-pocus, he then proceeds to identify the Germans as being the long-lost tribe of Judah, the Americans being the long-lost tribe of Manasseh, etc., etc. What this tortured and convulsive reasoning does is, one, it completely confuses the identity of the enemy. Two, it leads a lot of good white racial fighters into the ranks of that suicidal line of thinking, namely Christianity. Three, worst of all, it even makes some of the white people wish they were the Israelites or the Jews, and four, by the time they have swallowed all these idiotic concepts and lines of reasoning, or shall we say, of unreasoning, they are so confused and mixed up, and again, until their thinking is straightened out, they are completely useless to the cause of the white race. Why anyone would want to be a descendant of the tribe of Judah after reading what a whoremongering reprobate Judah was, and what a treacherous, deceptive, bloodthirsty bunch of cutthroats the Israelites were, even according to their own rendering of history, is beyond comprehension. It is indeed hard to understand why anyone in their right mind would even want to have any association whatsoever with these kinds of renegades much less want to be a descendant of such scoundrels. Another variation of this same format is that applied by the numerous Christian churches themselves, some of which preach the evils of communism, thereby luring a lot of good white people who are concerned about the Jewish destruction of their country into their church. As they enter into the membership of their church, being lured into it in the first place because of their opposition to communism, the preacher lulls them more and more into being concerned about the nebulous hereafter, rather than the obvious destruction of their country and their race. After a while, it becomes less and less important to the recruits to struggle against what by now has come to seem to them as insurmountable odds anyway, and soon they fall prey to the same baited trap as did the Romans. After going to church long enough and hearing the preacher's brain pollution unsuspectingly being practiced upon them, they become devoted members of the Christian faith. They begin to love the Jews, and their main concern becomes saving souls for Christ. Another group of people has thereby been led down the primrose path of not defending their race, their family, or their country, having fallen victim to the same poisonous creed as destroyed the Romans. One particularly vicious hooker most of these anti-communist preachers, the vast majority are pro-communist, usually throw into their anti-communist speeches, is to really take out after Adolf Hitler, rather than the vicious Jewish agents of communism. By pulling this sleazy trick, they accomplish a rather unique feat, namely, that of overwhelmingly impressing their victims with the inevitable forward march of communism, although admittedly it be evil, and through deceiving them into believing that the cure for it, which Hitler personified, is just as bad, and is, they say, actually the same thing as Jewish communism itself, a most treacherous deception. As it must be, for lack of space, this is only an incomplete summary of those organizations the Jews have concocted to lead us, i.e., lead us into a trap. However, they are typical and are meant to be a warning to the unwary. It is safe to say, if they do not expose the Jew, if they do not stress race as the basic rallying cry, if they do nothing more than deplore and lament, but offer no solution, if they are promoting Christianity, then they are not on our side.